Ficatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge. Simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ficatra AI. Welcome to this deep dive. Today, we're opening up a really foundational work. It basically set the blueprint for thinking about power and government for, well, millennia. Aristotle's Politics.
Yeah, and this isn't just, dusting off an old book. It's the text that really helps us understand constitutions, what it means to be a citizen, political stability, even today.
Absolutely. We're going right to the source to pull out Aristotle's thinking on governance, citizenship, and achieving the good life eudaimonia.
And why it matters now. I mean, look around. Political instability, debates about government. This book, even though it's over 2,000 years old, gives us a framework.
That's the core of it. It tackles the big questions. We're trying to unpack the central one he was wrestling with. What's the best way to organize society so people can actually flourish?
What structure lets human beings reach their full potential? That's the quest.
So let's talk about the man himself, Aristotle, 384-322 BC. Obviously a giant figure, Plato's student. But his resume gives him this really unique political angle.
Right, because he wasn't just a philosopher in an ivory tower. He was the tutor to Alexander the Great. Think about that.
Yeah, that's a fascinating mix, isn't it? High philosophy meets, well, world conquest.
Exactly. It gives him this kind of dual perspective theory and very raw practical power. And you see that in how he worked.
His whole approach feels different from Plato's idealism. Aristotle was much more empirical, pragmatic.
Totally. He treated the state almost like a biologist would treat an organism, something to observe, dissect, classify meticulously.
And that famous story, he didn't just sit and think about the ideal state in the abstract. He actually gathered data.
Yeah, he and his students collected and analyzed the constitutions of 158 different Greek city-states. Can you imagine? Grounding political theory in actual data. He was basically the first political scientist.
And it's key to remember, politics comes right after his big work on ethics, the Nicomachean Ethics.
Right. If the ethics is about the good life for one person, politics argues you can't really achieve that alone. You need a well-run community.
The individual and the state are linked. He sees the state as growing naturally, like a living thing.
From the smallest unit, the household, or oikos, then the village, all the way up to the self-sufficient city-state, the polis. It's a logical progression.
Okay, so let's nail down his central argument. The state, the polis, isn't just some contract for safety or trade. It's natural.
And it exists for a specific purpose, to make the good life, eudaimonia, possible for its citizens.
This connects to his famous idea that humans are zoon politikon.
The political animal, yeah. Because we have reason and speech, we're naturally built for community living. He argued, we can only really fulfill our potential, become fully human, by participating in the life of the polis.
Living outside it? That was falling short of your potential.
Or you were, as he put it, either a beast or a god. Not quite human.
So if the goal is the good life through the polis, how do you get there? That leads him to classifying governments.
And he comes up with six main types. But the whole system hinges on one crucial distinction.
It's all about motive, right?
Exactly. Two questions. How many people rule one, a few, or many? And why do they rule for the common good? Or just for themselves?
So the good forms are aimed at everyone's benefit. Monarchy, rule by one virtuous leader. Aristocracy, rule by the best, the most virtuous few.
And polity, rule by the many, but still focused on the common good.
Then you get the bad forms, the perversions, where the rulers are self-interested.
Tyranny, which is the selfish version of monarchy. Oligarchy, rule by the rich, purely for the benefit of the rich.
And then democracy. Which sounds weird to us now, because we see democracy as the ideal.
Right. But for Aristotle, the democracy he observed was often rule by the poor, for the poor, often involving, taking wealth from the rich.
So in his view, if any group, rich or poor, ruled only for its own class interest, it wasn't aiming for the good of the whole community.
Which meant it was unstable. It violated the state's purpose. That's why both oligarchy and the kind of democracy he saw were considered deviations. They bred conflict.
Okay, so if stability and the common good are the goals, he highlights two really key things needed to support any decent system. First up, the rule of law.
Yes, this is huge. Law, for Aristotle, is better than the rule of any single person, no matter how wise or good they might seem.
Why?
Because law represents reason without passion. People get emotional, biased, tired, corruptible. Law provides a steady, impartial framework. It protects everyone.
It treats people as equals before the law.
Exactly. And the second pillar, this feels incredibly relevant now, is the need for a strong middle class. He really hammers this in book four.
This is maybe his most practical insight. Why the middle class?
Because they're sort of in the sweet spot. They have enough property that they're not desperate and envious like the very poor might be.
But they're not so wealthy that they become arrogant or feel above the law like the super rich might.
Right. They have a stake in stability. They don't want chaos. Yeah. They act as a buffer between the extremes of wealth and poverty.
So they're the glue holding society together, preventing that constant tug of war between the rich and poor factions.
Pretty much. If you have more people in the middle who want to keep things stable than people at the extremes who want radical change, your state is much more likely to last.
And that's why his preferred practical constitution wasn't a pure monarchy or aristocracy, which might be ideal in theory, but hard to achieve.
No, his practical ideal was the polity.
Which is?
It's a blend. A careful mix of oligarchy rule by the wealthy few, bringing administrative skill and resources, and democracy rule by the many, bringing liberty in numbers.
Held together by that strong middle class, it takes the useful parts of both systems, but moderates their extremes.
Exactly. Balance and moderation. That's the recipe for stability.
Before he fully outlines his ideal state, though, he does spend some time critiquing other ideas, including Plato's.
Yeah, he wasn't afraid to disagree with his teacher, especially on things like communal property and families, which Plato proposed in the Republic.
Aristotle was pretty skeptical about that.
Deeply skeptical. His argument was practical, almost common sense. If everything is owned by everyone, who takes care of it?
What is common to the greatest number has the least care bestowed upon it. That's the quote, right?
That's the one. It's like, if everyone owns the park, no one feels personally responsible for picking up the litter. He thought private ownership and family ties provided necessary incentives for care and, well, natural affection.
He also looked hard at real-world examples, didn't he? Like Sparta.
Yes, he admired their military discipline, but pointed out flaws, like how they treated the Helots, their enslaved population. That created constant simmering resentment and instability.
Which ties into his analysis of revolution or stasis.
He pinpointed the root cause, a feeling of inequality. People believing they aren't getting their fair share, whether it's power, honor, or resources.
And that feeling could be exploited.
Right. By demagogues in democracies whipping up the poor, or triggered by outright oppression in oligarchies. The solution, again and again, moderation, finding that balance.
So if the state's goal is the good life, and stability is key, who actually gets to be part of this political life? What did he mean by citizen?
It wasn't just about living somewhere. For Aristotle, true citizenship was active.
You had to participate.
Yes. It meant having the right and the capability to take part in the state's decision-making, the judicial and deliberative parts, to rule and be ruled in turn. It required active involvement.
Okay, that leads us to his vision of the ideal state, which he sketches out mostly in Book 7 and 8. What did that look like?
It was a state focused squarely on cultivating virtue. Moderate in size, not too big, not too small. And importantly, there was a distinction between citizens, those who did politics and warfare, and non-citizens, like farmers and craftsmen, who supported the city.
And the absolute most critical element for making this ideal state work.
Education, no question. He saw education as the bedrock.
But not just any education.
No, it had to be public, the same for everyone. And its goal wasn't just job training. It was about shaping the whole person, cultivating virtue.
And preparing citizens for something specific. Leisure. Skull.
Exactly, skull. Mm-hmm. Which didn't mean just loafing around. For Aristotle, leisure was the time free from necessity, time you could dedicate to higher things, philosophy, art, contemplation, civic participation.
Things done for their own sake, not just for survival or money.
Right. And he argued you had to teach people how to use leisure well. If you don't, they'll waste it, or worse, turn to vice, which undermines the whole state.
Wow. So if we boil all this down, what are the main themes, the big messages we should take away?
Okay. Theme one, I'd say, is teleology, the purpose of the state. Its ultimate goal, its telos, isn't just keeping order or boosting the economy. It's enabling the good life, eudaimonia. It's fundamentally a moral project.
Theme two has to be the political animal. We're built for community. Reason and speech push us towards political life, and it's only within the polis that we can fully realize our human nature and potential.
And theme three, moderation equals stability. Extremes just don't work in the long run. Whether it's extreme democracy or oppressive oligarchy, they breed conflict, stasis. That balanced constitution, the polity, anchored by a solid middle class, that's the path to a lasting, stable society.
And underpinning that is the rule of law, ensuring fairness and protecting against arbitrary power.
Definitely. These ideas form a really coherent picture of what makes a political community work well.
Aristotle also had some incredibly memorable lines that just capture these ideas perfectly.
He really did. Let's pick a few.
Okay, the most famous. Man is by nature a political animal. Straight away, that tells you why we need the state for fulfillment. We're not meant to be hermits.
Then there's the bedrock of constitutionalism. The rule of law is preferable to that of any individual. Pure reason over potentially flawed human passion or bias.
Love this one, too. Political society exists for the sake of noble actions and not of mere companionship. It elevates politics. It's not just about hanging out. It's about striving for virtue together.
Yeah, it distinguishes the state from just a social club or a business deal.
And this one really connects the system to the people. A constitution is the way of life of a citizen body.
Ooh, that's powerful. The way you structure your government actually shapes the character, the habits, the values of the people living under it. It's not just neutral rules.
It really makes you think. And these aren't just historical curiosities. They apply right now, don't they?
Absolutely. Let's look at some applications. First, understanding polarization. Think about Aristotle's warning about extreme wealth inequality fueling conflict between rich and poor factions.
When that middle ground shrinks.
Exactly. He predicted instability. You can use that as a lens to look at social unrest and political division today.
Hmm.
Is the gap between extremes widening? Is the middle class feeling squeezed?
Application two, civic engagement. His idea of citizenship, active participation, ruling and being ruled is a direct challenge to apathy.
Right. It's a reminder that democracy isn't a spectator sport. Being informed, voting, participating in jury duty, these aren't just chores. They're part of fulfilling your role as a political animal, according to Aristotle.
Application three, judging leadership. He gives us a pretty clear ethical ruler. Are leaders acting for the common good, like his ideal monarch or aristocrat?
Or are they acting out of self-interest, favoring their own group, like a tyrant or an oligarch? It's a powerful standard for evaluating policies and politicians.
And finally, application four, education debates. His focus wasn't just skills for jogs.
No, the big question he raises is, are schools cultivating virtuous citizens? People who can think critically, engage ethically, and use their leisure time for meaningful pursuits, or are they just churning out workers for the economy? It's a challenge that's still very much alive.
So, reflecting on all this, what really stands out for you from politics?
For me, it's that incredible blend of deep philosophy and really practical, almost scientific analysis. He's not just dreaming. He's looking at Sparta, Carthage, all those constitutions, and saying, here's what works, here's what fails, and here's why.
It gives you a way to think critically about power.
Yeah, it teaches you how to ask the right questions about any political system you encounter. It's an amazing analytical toolkit.
And for me, the lasting takeaway is that politics isn't just this messy scramble for power we sometimes see. At its best, maybe its core purpose, is building a community where people can genuinely live well.
And that the health of that community, its stability and success, ultimately comes down to the character of the people within it. Which looped back to the Constitution and education.
It all connects. The way of life of the citizen body.
Precisely. It's a profound and enduring vision.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Acacha Foundation.